The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by TechTown Detroit, Detroit's entrepreneurship hub. TechTown Detroit is a business incubator and accelerator, helping tech startups and local businesses launch and grow. TechTown supports businesses with co-working, office, meeting, and event space. They also connect entrepreneurs to resources and learning and networking events in Detroit. TechTown Detroit, Detroit's entrepreneurship hub. The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Samaritas, the state's largest private foster care and adoption agency. However, Samaritas also provides a number of other services around the state. They are one of the largest refugee resettlement agencies in Michigan. They serve homeless families, persons with disabilities, abused and trafficked women. They also provide market rate and affordable housing for seniors and HUD housing for families, and also have skilled nursing, memory care, and rehab communities in Grand Rapids, Cadillac, and Saginaw. Samaritas, we thank them for their support here at Deadline Detroit. Hey everybody, welcome to the week that was on Deadline Detroit. I'm Craig Folly. Here with me as usual, Nancy Derringer is back. Welcome back, Nancy. Mm-hmm. Occupying the coveted chair. We always appreciate you being
chair.
Here.
Thank
that's
you,
right,
the bimbo
that's
chair.
Right. Alan Lengel, of course, editor and co-founder of Deadline Detroit is here with me as well. And we welcome back again noted defense attorney Steve Fishman. We appreciate your perspective on all this. Thank you for being here.
I'm glad to be moved out of the bimbo chair.
That's right. Not the place you want to occupy.
Age 70, I don't think that's really something that would fit with me.
And you realize this is episode 31 of this already. We've done this 31 times. Which
we
is
really?
Pretty, yeah.
Wow.
I mean, you start
that's
getting
amazing.
These numbers. It's building up. Let's talk about what's been going on this week. Obviously, the big story this week is the impeachment hearings that have been going on.
Some pretty
good testimony that we saw over the last few days. I thought Gordon Sondland, of course, the ambassador to the EU, had a lot of things to say, a lot of things to get off his chest, and it clearly seemed as if he did not want to be the latest person to go to jail
like
in defense
canary.
Of this guy.
Exactly.
And then Dr. Fiona Hill, was very impressive yesterday on the stand as well. But it's kind of funny. It doesn't seem to have moved the needle at all for people. I mean, the facts are there. You now have corroboration of everything the whistleblower said and corroboration that there indeed was a quid pro quo, a bribe, an extortion, whatever you want to call it, whatever focus groups tell you to call it. There was something there, but people don't seem to be moved on this either way.
It doesn't surprise me. Does it surprise you?
No.
Okay. Does it surprise you?
A little bit. I kind of thought, I think what the problem really is that most people don't have the time to sit and really watch and digest all of it.
Sure.
Because it really was a nice line. It was almost like a good criminal trial. They brought in witness after witness after witness. I thought it was smart to have Dr. Hill last because she was one who looked them right in the eye and told them how full of crap they were.
Right.
And told them how dangerous
was awesome.
It was to the country.
She, and the British accent,
of course, makes any. You could be saying peas and carrots if you have a British accent. It comes across a lot more impressive.
She mentioned that. She said she had a working class accent.
Yes.
That's one reason she immigrated to America, because that would not hold her back. Go ahead.
Yeah. Henry Higgins wouldn't have wanted to train her, huh?
Yeah. That's
right. No, but in all seriousness, I think that they did a good job in terms of you bring Taylor and the other guy the first day. You bring Volker and Harrison, I think his name was, whatever, the second day. And then to finish with the young fella and with Dr. Hill,
they were both great.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but you have to, a lot of people who are working, for instance, they're at work all day long. And
right.
if you watch Fox News and you get a steady diet of their baloney, then it's difficult to move a needle.
Plus, who is unmoved? I mean, what is this based on?
I was reading this morning, and it was in The Hill this morning. I was reading this. But there's new polling data out of Wisconsin that shows that President Trump's approval rating has actually increased over this, and the number of people supporting impeachment has gone down.
Well, then we clearly have to have Wisconsin secede from the nation, because, I mean, we can't have that kind of
people
crap.
People don't want to. I was exchanging some comments with somebody on Facebook who's obviously conservative, and he's like, no quid pro quo. Nobody said it. And I wrote back, I said, you need to turn the volume on the TV. it's essential. It's people don't want to hear it. And that's either people have decided already. I mean, you saw Lindsey Graham said, I don't care what the evidence is. It's I'm not going to go.
I'm not listening.
Blah, blah, blah. People don't care about the facts. And that's why, brilliantly, Trump says, read the transcript knowing who is going to, about 0.1% of the people are going to go and read the transcript, if that many. He understands. Nobody wants people. I mean, we're all sitting there just hungry going, wow, look at all this amazing evidence. And the other people are like, what evidence?
Yeah.
We don't see anything.
You know, Gordon Sondland's testimony, though, the other day, where he says everybody was in the loop. Pompeo was in the loop. Mulvaney was in the loop. Trump was in the loop. This was all at the direction of the president. I mean, he laid it right at the doorstep of the White House and said, this is exactly what happened. He couldn't have said it any plainer. You know, if this were a jury trial at this point and that guy was testifying, Steve, it seems that, you know, that's something that they would take into account because he's got, you know, he's got a lot to lose, actually, here. He potentially opened himself up to some problems.
I think, and I don't know the name of the lawyer, but I've heard from friends of mine, judges and other lawyers, that the guy's a great lawyer. That guy saved Gordon Sondland's butt.
Yeah.
Because his original deposition.
The Republican
lawyer? That guy couldn't spell cat. If you spotted him at CNNA, what are you, killing me? He could be in school with Devin Nunes, you know. I think that what happened with Sondland, and it makes complete sense, and I think that the Democrats plus the Democrats' lawyer could have done a better job of bringing it out. He lied in his original deposition. He tried to cover for these people.
Right.
And the lawyer, I think, and I have had that experience, certainly as most of us criminal lawyers have, sat him down and said, look, son, you want to go to jail? Because that's where you're headed. It's very simple. There's perjury, lying under oath. There's obstruction of justice. Right. And he corrected himself. And I think what he did, I don't think anybody knew for sure what he was going to do. I know I was driving downtown. I happened to be in the car. And literally his entire opening statement was when I left the house in Southfield. So I got downtown. And I was kind of nodding my head, oh, okay. And I don't think that the Democrats were ready for it. My biggest criticism, and you guys have heard this before, I think when we've discussed this, I think, unfortunately, even the lawyers, even Adam Schiff, who did, I thought, a pretty good job of running the thing, I think he and the lawyer, they have their schedule of the things they're going to ask. And with Sondland, the problem was you really didn't know for sure what he was going to say because he had said two different things.
Right.
I think Schiff wound up asking, he took about 10 or 15 minutes, but to me, as an experienced trial lawyer, he just didn't look like he was comfortable. If you're listening to the guy, the easy thing to start with Sondland would have been, look, sir, you made a lot of dough in your life, didn't you? And you spent $1 million and you became the ambassador to the EU, yeah, and you took it seriously. You're doing the best you can. You don't have any experience at it. He'd say yes. And then you realize when all this stuff started happening and you started listening to the information coming out of the White House and that somebody might be thinking of you as the fall guy. And I would say it just like that. And the thing we don't know, and I hate to run on, the thing we don't know, and I was discussing this again with a couple of our federal judges just in conversation, what we don't know is, did they make a decision? Do they purposely keep people who talk like me or Bob Morgan out of these hearings? Or if they get someone like us, they tell us, we don't want you to talk like a normal person. We want you to talk like a lawyer. You can't say the word shit. I mean, are you kidding me? Fig? In 2019? I mean, how ridiculous was that? My point being, I think they were wired to their talking points. And I think, I don't know if it was from Schiff or they all huddle together, you know, and they make their plans. Here's how we're going to project ourselves. They needed a regular speaking person. I always keep bringing up Morgan. Someone like us who talks in normal English, who listens to what the witness says, and then leads them through things where all the witness is going to do is agree with you. Sondland would have agreed with every single thing I just said. You knew you're not going, right?
Right.
Of course I'm not going. So therefore, you come in here and you tell the whole truth. And when you say da-da-da-da-da, that's the truth, and it's
real quick. How common is it for prosecutors and court cases to allow somebody to correct their testimony? Will they give you an opportunity to come clean if you didn't necessarily do so the first time around? Without
100% of the time,
okay.
Absolutely. And anybody that doesn't take advantage of that is either a fool himself or as a fool for a lawyer. Yeah. Absolutely, you can correct. Yes.
I've got a question. I was discussing with a friend yesterday, and you know, Bolton is waiting for a ruling, you know, on the
Bolton's waiting for his book to come out. He just wants the good parts.
Exactly.
To
And so the question is, during a Senate trial, is it treated the very same way as a regular trial? And couldn't Bolton still say, I'm still waiting on this ruling, or would a subpoena be Would he have that option in a trial as opposed to testifying before Congress?
Look, I've never participated in an impeachment trial. I remember Nixon's and I remember Clinton's.
Right.
But the rules, as far as the rules are set by the Senate, basically. I mean, you've been reading in the paper,
yeah,
McConnell.
Right.
Maybe we'll do it in 2 weeks. Maybe we'll do it with one finger up our nose. Right. Who knows? But you certainly can challenge a subpoena. The lawyer for any witness can challenge a subpoena. And most of the time, it is for a trial. If someone gets subpoenaed, I've had it 3 or 4 times. A person gets a subpoena. They either have a privilege issue or they think that something was wrong about the process. You can appeal it. You can appeal it to the judge in front of whom the trial is, and then you can appeal that if you want. So my guess is that he could take the same position there if he wants to.
You know, it's interesting. I mean, you might see the Senate. I imagine the headphone, all the Republicans wearing these noise headphones, and then when the testimony's over, they take it off and say, "We haven't heard a thing. We don't get it. Well, we don't understand."
It's been interesting, though, to watch this whole thing, because as the week started in the first testimony, the Republicans kept saying, well, the star witnesses are on day one. No, they weren't. They actually set the trap very nicely, I thought, throughout the week in the way that they said, okay, here's the way things normally work. Here's what was abnormal about the way that this whole thing worked. And they kept building on that as the week went on. And so now, I mean, the defense about this, well, see, there was no quid pro quo. To now, well, there was, but is it really an impeachable offense? And that's where we are right now is the question. Okay, he did this stuff. And even the hardcore Republicans are saying, yeah, he did this stuff.
Yeah.
And they can't deny it anymore.
Well, you're
but
not
the
really
question
seeing
is,
that
but
much.
The, well, that's
the competence.
They're
but
not,
that's
they're
what's
not even admitting a quid pro quo.
But they are. I mean, if you talk to some of the reporters that cover the Hill on a regular basis, they are talking to these people. Sure. They want to talk
privately.
Off the record. And they're saying, yeah, he did it, but are we going to be willing to impeach him over this kind of stuff, or do we slap some sort of censure on him, or do we just sit there and go, hey, do it again and you're in
real
trouble?
We're talking about removing from office.
Do it.
Yeah, it's not impeaching.
It's like, but
okay.
Exactly. He's going to be impeached, but he won't be convicted. So the question is, the debate we should be having is, what constitutes an impeachable offense?
Right. That's
what
a good point.
What is an impeachable offense? Because he did something wrong here, and nobody can deny it anymore.
Right.
Well, there's go ahead.
I was going to say, I think the key issue here is, you know, yes, there's no question that he did something inappropriate.
Very
and then the
so.
Debate becomes, you know, is this impeachable? But the real thing is, if he were to at least say, yes, I did something wrong, no, this was not a perfect call, then maybe it gives you a little leeway for consideration of what impeach or not impeach. But when you have a president there who really clearly will at least not admit that he's wrong about anything and he's carrying on like a criminal enterprise there, I think you have no choice but to proceed and impeach and try. But, you know, he's not going to, at this point, get convicted. I mean, we've never, as Schiff said, you know, where are the Howard Bakers? Where are the Republicans, the reasonable Republicans? I mean, we're seeing the worst of the Republican Party that I think we've ever seen. And I say that with some bias, but...
You're not going to want to have Thanksgiving with the Romneys this year, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, Ronna McDaniel.
I want to hang out with Jim Jordan. That's the guy I want to hang out with.
Ronna McDaniel, who dropped her name Romney to get
awkward.
The job.
Awkward. Right.
Yeah.
The RNC.
So there's two questions. That you mentioned, if this were a trial, if this were a jury trial, and they presented the evidence in the manner in which it was presented, first thing you got to remember, the big difference between a jury trial and this, the jurors are there every day and they have no choice but to listen. The judge is sitting up there. The jurors are on there for 6 hours a day or however long it is. Any jury, I think clearly, would convict him beyond a reasonable doubt of having done what he's charged with. That's a legal question. Right. The question you guys are talking about, though, is really a political question,
sure.
Right?
Right, sure.
Now, we know he's guilty. I mean, and to your point, do you really think he's ever going to say, when he was 4 years old and got caught with his fingers, with chocolate all over his face, he never said, you know what, Mom, I was in the chocolate. He lied then because he has
the criminal mind.
When he was four. Okay.
We want to start your own podcast, so we're just going to call it the criminal mind.
But I think that's the issue that's the hardest thing to wrestle with, particularly for lawyers, and more generally for those of us who are liberal-minded, whether you're a Democrat or not. You could be a Milliken Republican and be disgusted with what this guy does.
Right,
but that's the problem. Sure, he would lose in a jury trial. He'd be look, every other one of them, Manafort got convicted, Stone got convicted. If he were on trial in front of a jury, he'd be convicted, no doubt.
There was, last night on MSNBC, there was a Ken Starr prosecutor who said, this is a perfect case of impeachment, and this is what the Constitution was set up for, this type of behavior.
But the problem is that it's a political question, ultimately. Right. And if you have Lindsey Graham, who claims to be a lawyer, his big military service was as a lawyer, okay?
Right.
He's going to tell you, I'm a juror. I'm going to sit with my fingers in my ears. I'm not watching anything, reading anything, or listening to anything, and I'm a juror. Right. Could you imagine a juror telling Judge Cohn, well, yeah, Judge, I'll sit here, but I'm going to stab my fingers in my ears, I'm going to read the newspaper, and I'm not listening to nothing.
Right.
But I'll be a fair juror.
I'll be interested, though. I mean, the guy who's going to preside over the trial, of course, is the Chief Justice of the United States, John Roberts.
Mr. Umpire. I'm just here to call balls and strikes. Right.
But John Roberts has shown a willingness to protect the integrity of the court. He seems to, he does not want this to be seen as a totally partisan thing.
He's got rings. Yeah.
Well, yeah, but he also has ruled in certain cases.
Yeah,
in ways
I know.
I
realize
that.
I'll give him his props on that one.
Well, that's the question. Does he? I mean, we'll see. And Trump may have a beef because he has gone after Trump on a couple of occasions.
Yeah.
Well, he never went after Trump. He
criticized him a couple
of times. No, he reacted to what Trump had.
He was defending the judges.
Yeah. Keep in mind when you say, yeah, he's the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court. Don't ask him, please, or don't look it up and see how many criminal cases or how many cases he ever presided over in his life. The only person out of the nine of them, I'm pretty sure I'm right about this, that's ever been a trial judge is Sonia Sotomayor. Everybody else comes from academia. Mm-hmm. So the notion of him presiding over a trial, it'll be new to him, too. I'm telling you, you can be the Chief Justice, but we don't have any trial judges other than Justice Sotomayor who've ever even presided over a trial.
He's probably sitting at home watching Perry Mason trials.
Well, that's right.
Before we let this go, though, I when you said something about Sondland's lawyer saying, "Son, do you want to go to jail?" I was thinking about everything I've read about Gordon Sondland leading up to this, which is that he's a man as a hotelier who appreciates the finer things in life.
Sure.
In fact, they said that he would carry into meetings a small wireless buzzer that he would a silent buzzer that he would press when he was ready for his teacup to be refilled, and that would summon a servant to come in and silently pour him another cup of tea.
They'll do that in prison.
Give me some more coffee.
He's also either the son or grandson of Holocaust survivors, if I'm not mistaken.
I can just imagine this guy contemplating even a club-fed prison and going, do I want to eat grilled cheese for the rest of
my life? Or do I want to be on my yacht?
Or do I want to
sound?
Or do I want to be Ballarine. Up in the lovely Pacific Northwest perusing a wine list?
That's right.
I think there's more to it than that. I think he's a smart enough guy, and the way I would have asked it of him if I had been cross-examining him, he's smart enough to recognize when they're getting ready to use you as the fall guy, forgetting whether you're going to go eat grilled cheese and do push-ups and shoot layups. I mean, that's not the issue.
The window of the bus has been opened. And
the issue is, that he's smart enough to realize that the Mick Mulvaney, these are criminals, these guys.
Yeah, right.
And that they're looking for the guy to toss under the bus. And your lawyer communicated to you, sir, didn't he?
Yeah.
Sometimes somebody has to say, not me.
Yeah.
And that's what you are doing today. And he would have said yes. That's
yes,
exactly. And it would have been more persuasive, I think, than just asking those bland questions. I mean, Schiff made some good speeches.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the lawyer, I'm sure he's talented. He was a former AUSA. Mm-hmm. But either they didn't let him or maybe that's just not his personality. Sondland has a personality, you could tell.
Yeah.
And you could have brought that stuff out. He was a Yiddle. You know what I mean? And you could bring that out.
Yeah.
And I think they missed a little bit there by doing it in such a formal fashion. I think jurors like to hear people who talk normal. The public wants to hear people who talk normal.
Right. The guy who flips first gets the best deal.
That's very true. although, I was watching Fox and Friends this morning.
Oh, why? Okay.
Because I like to keep
an eye on
what's going on.
Okay, yeah.
Their big story today, of course, was this report that the Justice Department, the Inspector General, has been looking into the FISA warrants that went after Carter Page, which started this whole thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they found that a junior-level FBI lawyer apparently doctored part of the application.
Doctored how?
They just said that he basically he put something in there to say that he had proof of this when he didn't. One part of it. But here's the thing about it. So they put this up, proof that the deep state, Fox has been all over this, and this is like just adding more fuel to the fire, saying, see, they've been out to get Donald Trump since the beginning, and this is deep state. The FBI did this. But here's the thing. Horowitz, of course, is the inspector general. And what he basically said was, well, you know, hey, yeah, this happened, but it didn't do anything to alter the validity of the FISA warrant. He's like, yeah, it didn't do anything
Which
about it.
It went in front of three different judges, didn't it, at
yeah,
some point?
Yeah, absolutely. So, huh. I mean, so they're like, see, somebody altered a document. Well, this guy might have dotted an I, crossed a T the wrong way. But he just said, hey, it doesn't do anything to actually alter the validity. The FISA warrant was still valid.
Right. So let me tell you what the law is, what the law of the Supreme Court in the case called Franks versus Delaware. If you have an affidavit, which is what they're talking about, and whether you call it altered or whether you call it an outright lie, the defense has the right to challenge a search warrant, for instance, saying that some of the statements, forget altered, they're lies by the affiant, whether it's a police officer or an FBI agent or whoever. Assuming you can prove that, even if you prove that, the job of the district judge and then eventually the appellate judges is to see that if you take out the offending material, if you want to call it altered or you want to call it an outright lie, if you take out the offending material, does the rest of the affidavit still present probable cause to do whatever it is in this instance?
So you don't throw the whole thing out?
Never. What they have to do is they have to make an independent determination, the judge does, as to whether or not there's still enough stuff that's unchallenged, that's truthful, that's not altered. Mm-hmm. And that's obviously what happened. And this guy Horowitz is certainly no big liberal. I mean, he's not exactly shown himself to be a guy.
He's more political. Somebody in Washington has told me that. I mean, we always think of the IG as being very, very impartial, but he's political. And I think, you know, one of the big questions is, you know, I see on, you know, some of the retired FBI agents that I'm friends with saying, oh, this is going to change the whole tenor of everything that's going on with impeachment and stuff. And I say, look, the bottom line is that I think the IG report is going to find that the FBI's investigation was legitimate, that they had a good reason to launch it. There were enough people in the administration who were meeting with Russians. There was leaks coming from WikiLeaks. I think there's enough there. Comey was, the president was asking Comey to, alter the Michael Flynn. We had Manafort, representing Ukraine with Russian ties and stuff like that. There was enough there that I think the FBI would have been remiss if they had not at least looked into it. So they're trying to say that the whole investigation is invalid, and I don't think we're going to see that. But
well, interesting, in true Trumpian fashion, I was watching Fox and Friends, getting back to this, President Trump was on for like 50 minutes with Kilmeade and those guys this morning. 50 minutes, and I'll tell you what, go back and watch some of this stuff, because he was all over the place this morning talking about a lot of different things. But one of the things that came up to me that I was listening to, there is some legislation in Congress right now that has got veto-proof majorities on both sides to stand with the protesters in Hong Kong against this. The president said that he may veto that bill in an effort to get a trade deal with Xi. And here's what he said. He says, yeah, we have to stand with Hong Kong, but I'm also standing with President Xi. He's a friend of mine. He's an incredible guy. But we have to stand, .. I'd like to see them work it out, okay? I stand with freedom. I stand with all the things that I want to do. But we are also in the process of making one of the largest trade deals in history. And if we could do that, it would be great. So he is willing, potentially, to throw the protesters in Hong Kong under the bus.
I'm shocked. What about the Kurds?
He threw Jamal Khashoggi under the bus because he was afraid that oil prices would go up.
I mean, the House. Okay, this is how bipartisan this is. Yeah. On Wednesday, it was the Hong Kong Human Rights and Democracy Act. And basically, it's just a slap on the wrist saying, you're bad, bad, don't do this.
It's a resolution.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The vote was 417-1.
Oh, who was the one?
Thomas Massie, a Republican from Kentucky. Don't know why. It doesn't say why.
But, because there's...
I mean, but again,
a bad meal.
But this is one of those things that sends a message about U.S. priorities and what we care about. And I mean, you know, far from the shining city on a hill, we keep moving further and further away from Reagan's vision for America, that we be this example for the rest of the world. And
I really struggle with this one.
If there was a resolution saying, we want a resolution saying Hitler's bad, maybe there'd be like one or two guys that say, no, I don't want to, I don't want to get involved with that. By the way, there's an excellent, I know we're running out of time here, but there's an excellent cartoon. There's an excellent cartoon of this woman with a babushka holding her child, and it says Kurds on her shirt.
She's a Kurd.
She's a Kurd. And you see a picture of Donald Trump pulling up in a golf cart, and she says, and she's, you know, the bombed out village, and he pulls up, and she says, "Help us." And he goes, "Got any dirt on Biden?"
All right. Let's move on, because there's some other stuff that we've got to get to. Talking about, you know, partisan politics here in Michigan, it was an interesting week. Mike Shirkey, of course, the Senate Majority Leader, speaking to a group of students at Hillsdale College. No shock there. Hillsdale, of course, very conservative school. In fact, most of the Heritage Foundation comes out of there, and half of the Trump staffers, I think, went to Hillsdale in some capacity.
Or Liberty.
That's very true. But he basically called some unnamed Democratic legislators and Governor Whitmer, said they were, quote, on the batshit crazy spectrum.
Right.
And the outrage was pretty quick.
He thought he was in a safe space. And one of those
now, he did
pesky,
apologize to her.
I was just going to say, one of those pesky journalists actually quoted him accurately, and then he did have to apologize. So I'm going to bow out of this one because of some other conflicts that I have, but that was probably not a good move.
Yeah, well, and Peter Lucido started this week.
He called
her petulant, reckless, illogical, and spiteful. So now a lot of people are saying that these are sexist remarks because these are not things that you would necessarily attach to a male politician. That would just be tough, stern.
I would call a male politician batshit crazy, but maybe not in front of an audience.
Maybe
with
Trump.
Just
saying.
You know, this is not good, considering that they still haven't settled on a budget. You've got a bunch of guys. By the way, why do we still have hunting break for the legislature?
I'm sorry.
You want to go hunting? Fine. Miss a couple of votes. But, you know, there's a lot of us that actually have things that we want to do, and we're not traipsing through the woods up north.
Right.
You know, and I don't care if you hunt. That's fine. That's your right to do so.
Yeah.
Go for it. But
at
my world
not,
shouldn't stop because you want to go do that.
At least it's not a school holiday, which it is in some states.
Wow.
So,
like I said, if you live in the UP and, you know, there are people that's how they live over the winter, is
sure,
make sure
I
they get
it.
A couple of deer. But
let me just toss.
I grew up. We got off for Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur, but not for hunting.
I think it'd be naive to not agree that when male representatives and state senators make comments like that about a female governor, it's absolutely sexist. Of course it is. They would never. What was the phraseology? They never say that about.
He never. Yeah. He wouldn't.
That shit crazy. They wouldn't even say that. They'd come up with some other phrase, but they wouldn't talk about a male
obstreperous.
Like,
right.
And what's astounding to me, and it's the same thing when I watch the Republicans in the committee in Washington. It's astounding to me that in 2019, not only did they do it, they still get away with it.
Mm-hmm.
They still get away with it.
It's not like he said she was on her period or something.
Right. You know? Well, they could say that too. I mean, look what Trump said, and he got away with it.
Oh, yeah.
That's
true.
It's just, it'd be completely naive to pretend that stuff's out there. It might be out the door at the University of Michigan campus, but it's not out the door in the normal.
Right.
Right. Yeah, you're right.
All right. That's well, we've got to talk about Operation Cylinder.
Oh,
this lawsuit that General Motors brought against Fiat Chrysler, basically depicting Sergio Marchionne as a mastermind of this elaborate plot to force General Motors into a relationship with Fiat Chrysler. This is some pretty interesting stuff, like a full racketeering lawsuit.
It was amazing. I mean, this is like two members of the Detroit Three, with this nefarious dealing, using the UAW as this as a lever against them. I read that Daniel Howe's column yesterday in the news, and I was just fascinated by that. Marchionne is like a gangster. He was. He's dead now, but
at the same time, basically what he's trying to do is force GM into a bad situation because of the labor agreement that they set that puts GM in a bad position, weakens them enough that they have no choice but to merge with somebody, which would be Fiat Chrysler.
Yeah. And he's also
and get rid of Harry Barra in the process.
Yes, so I'm sure she would have been the next person to go. But the using the UAW, which has always had this sterling reputation as like
that's
the clean
right
union,
now.
And I mean it was really interesting how Marchionne like wanted to do this for years. And first he had Ron Gettelfinger, who was a Boy Scout, and then he had
Bob King, who was also another Boy Scout.
But then he fought Gary Jones. It was like that's my guy, and suddenly the bribery and the kickbacks and the Palm Springs townhouses and all that stuff started flowing. And,
well, and Gary
that
Jones
is so disgraceful.
Now gone.
Yeah.
Officially steps down.
They are scum. to have taken over a union. I think it's been a great union for a long for generation after generation.
I couldn't agree with you more. I think it's as bad a crime, other than a violent crime. This is as bad.
Yeah.
The number of people who've pled.
Yeah.
And the kind of conduct that they did, and I wonder what Walter Reuther and Dick Frankenstein and those guys are rolling over in their graves.
It's systemic. I mean, if you had one here, one there, but it is deep. The bench is deep on this one, and it's really disgraceful.
Mm-hmm. Well, and of course, now they're still in the midst of negotiations with Ford, and they don't really have anybody running the ship, so to speak. I mean, they do.
Well, they've got the acting.
We'll be back in a couple of weeks when we figure out who's actually going to be our leader at this point. They've got an interim, obviously.
Well, they have an interim.
But still, they're not in the strongest position right now.
No, they're in a terrible position.
And they're lucky that they got the deals done that they did before Jones left, because now Ford's going to sort of they're going to mirror each other, so they should be able to get through it. But still,
Sergio dying was a good career move, because he would have been under
Sergio is well, he might have moved the operations back to Italy. I don't know what the extradition rules are over there, but so we shall see. Okay, we've got only a couple of minutes left here, and I do want to ask about this. December 1st looks like it's going to be the day that we're going to have legal recreational marijuana available in some places here in Michigan.
One love, man. So
a lot of people are sitting there going, whoa, it's going to be legal. Other people have been saying it's never been a problem to get it anyway.
Yeah, I know, right.
Exactly. Does this change things for anybody? I mean, just in terms of anybody worried or concerned that, this is going to be the gateway, this is what's going to lead kids over the edge to become hardened people, like Joe Biden said the other day in that debate, which we didn't even get to, by the way,
today. Hardened what?
Well, he just said
drug addicts.
Joe Biden called it a gateway drug. Which Cory Booker came back and said, "Were you high when you said that?"
I put on Facebook, and I agree, it's a gateway to Ruffles potato chips.
only three things that happen when you smoke weed. Everybody knows this.
What is
music?
It
sounds better. Yeah. You eat a lot of Sara Lee cake, and sex is terrific. I said that in federal court,
the gateway,
by the way,
to
in
a
open
better
court,
life.
On a transcript, and the judge asked me to repeat it. What did you say again?
Well, and I can say this joke because I am a deadhead, but what does a deadhead say when he runs out of pot?
What?
This band sucks.
Exactly. That's right. Music sounds a lot better.
And with that, we will end the week that was for the week. Week 31 of this. Thanks to Michael Lucido for engineering the broadcast today.
Michael Lucido.
Thank you to TechTown and Samaritas for sponsoring this broadcast each and every week. And a special thanks to my guest, Steve Fishman. Once again, we appreciate you being here, sir. Thank you. Nancy Derringer, as always, we appreciate it.
Nice to be back.
Alan Lengel, we appreciate you being here as well.
Thank you very much.
Quick reminder, everybody, check out DeadlineDetroit.com, Deadline TV. We got a couple new videos up there. Yum Village looks like a restaurant I want to go to.
Looks
Carlos
good.
And
Ooh,
Sammy,
looks like some good
check
stuff.
That out. So check out their food choices there. We went over to H&M yesterday, and boy, that's an interesting debate people are having about H&M.
Oh,
this new retail store downtown. I was the wrong person for that assignment. I just hate shopping.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay.
But it's up there anyway, so check that out. And, of course, the week that was will be up there, and the Zip a little bit later on as well. So, DeadlineDetroit.com. Lots of great content there, some good original reporting that we've been doing, lots of great stuff. And, Alan Lengel, you get to take us out.
Drive home safely.
The Craig Folly Show on Deadline Detroit is made possible in part by Mad Dog Professional Services. Mad Dog Professional Services focuses on putting their clients on the leading edge of technology, faster than thought possible, to capture new revenue streams. That's Mad Dog Professional Services.